Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm while she's away on vacation. For those looking to buy a house, mortgages are at record lows, but lender requirements to qualify for the loan are up. The Obama administration and lenders seem to be shifting their views on home ownership. Joining us to talk about what all of this means to those in the market for a new home. In the studio, Guy Sakala is with Inside Mortgage Finance Publications, and Dina El Bogdadi of The Washington Post covers this issue. Many of you have been reading her stories on this subject. And joining us by phone from Leesburg, Virginia, Thomas Lawler of Lawler Economic and Housing Consulting. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Good morning. Nice to have you here. And you can, of course, can join our conversation at 1-800-433-8850 or by email at drshow@wamu.org. I know this is an issue that affects a lot of our listeners, so give us a call with your own stories, your own experiences in the housing market, and we'd be happy to share them with our listeners on the Diane Rehm Show. And Dina, why don't you start with this, explaining this conundrum? You've got interest rates at a low rate, below 5%, 4.6, 4.7. You've got more than 6 million houses on the market, so there's a glut, prices are down, and yet from May to June, housing sales actually took a dip. Explain this conundrum here.
Okay, well, there are a couple of things going on. First of all, there's the tax credit, a very lucrative tax credit that was made available to first-time buyers and to some repeat buyers. That tax credit expired on April 30th. You had to have signed a contract by April 30th in order to qualify for this credit. So once it expired, then the sales plummeted. The other thing that's going on right now is, of course, joblessness. As long as people fear for their jobs, mm-hmm. of course, if they don't have a job, they're not going to be buying a home. They're not going to be committing to a 30-year mortgage. And so those are the two things that help explain the sales taking a nosedive.
Guy, other factors in addition to, I mean, I saw one quote saying, no job, no house. This is fairly, but it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, beyond the economic factors, we have mortgage factors. You know, one of the things that, you know, you alluded to before is that the mortgage landscape has changed dramatically. It's tougher than ever in terms of underwriting to get a mortgage. There's no, you need a down payment, you need a high credit score. All those are issues impacting who can get a mortgage and who can't. The other issue, of course, is housing prices themselves. Nobody likes to buy in a housing market that they think hasn't bottomed out or has the potential of housing prices declining. So unless people are comfortable that housing prices are on the upswing and also that they can sell their own home to trade up, you're not going to see a lot of activity.
So in some ways, the declining prices in an odd, almost perverse way become an inhibition to people buying, thinking that they might be buying on the downswing, not the upswing?
Exactly. I think we're getting near the bottom of the market, and you're seeing people who are comfortable that even if housing prices do dip, they're just going to dip a little. It's very hard to pick the exact bottom of any housing market, of course.
And Tom Lawler, what's your view about this conundrum of low interest rates, lots of houses out there, and yet slumping sales?
Well, I actually do think that the number one reason is the economy and jobs. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true, as other people said, that mortgages are also more difficult to obtain for a number of folks. But it's easy to overstate that because there still is true that the government has, you know, through much higher loan limits, has opened up government-sponsored mortgages to a larger segment of the market. And so as long as you can do the full Monty of documenting income, assets, et cetera, it's not that incredibly hard to qualify for a mortgage as long as you're employed, have a decent income, and are looking for a home that you can afford.
So, Dina, talk about listeners out there who might be listening to this. And what's your take on how affordable it is to buy a house today, and including the point that Guy and Tom made about mortgages? Obviously, some of the requirements have been tightened because some of them were so loose that it helped lead to the crisis.
That's right.
But what is the picture for someone listening to us right now?
Well, I think what people have to realize, too, about sort of the lack of activity is that a lot of people are stuck in the homes that they have. And I think that some people out there might be able to relate to that. Once the home prices declined and home values plummeted. People were stuck. You know, they suddenly owed more on their mortgages than their house mm-hmm. was worth, and that made it incredibly difficult to, or if not impossible, to sell their house or to refinance. And, you know, adding to the woes, you know, the job market out there, a lot of people who, you know, can't move for, you know, want to move for jobs and can't. So there are just a lot of people who are stuck in place right now. Even if they themselves are not in trouble, even if they can afford their mortgage, they just can't move and they can't buy homes.
Guy, expand on this point you made earlier about tougher requirements. You know, for someone out there, how is the situation different today than it was a year or two ago? Higher down payments? What are the practical conditions here we should know about?
One of the easiest things to do is just look at the type of mortgages that are being made now. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are large players in the market. They're accounting for close to two-thirds of the mortgages being made with their financing. We track their business pretty closely. And the average credit score that they're on their new business is like 760. The average equity or down payment is 25 to 30%. That's a pretty tough requirement.
And how does that compare to what it was in the middle of the looser and freer environment?
Well, one big change was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac weren't two-thirds of the market. They were a much lower thing. Mm-hmm. We had the subprime market. We had a lot of there was quite a bit of availability of no down payment mortgages. You could get credit scores of close to 550. Mm-hmm. You know, we basically, the joke was anyone with a pulse could get a mortgage, and that was readily available. That's no longer the case.
And Tom, even while these new requirements, higher down payments, higher credit scores, might be freezing some people out of the market, making harder for some people to buy homes, isn't there a universal feeling in the marketplace that this is a good thing, that that the previous situation led to too many bad loans?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. If you go back to the last decade, you know, during the housing froth bubble, whatever you want, mortgage credit was more readily available than any time in the history of the U.S. And a lot of the loans that were made last decade were loans that had never been made. If you had gone to a mortgage lender in the early 90s or the early 80s and described the loans being done, they would have said, you're an idiot.
Hmm.
You are crazy. So you are now in a situation that, yes, you have to have a better credit score. But remember what was happening, say, in the mid-2000s. People were getting mortgages with spotty credit where you didn't document their income and assets, mm-hmm. and they weren't putting any money down. Now, pretend you were a lender, and it was your money. Would you ever do that?
Well,
it's crazy.
But people did it.
People did it because everybody thought that with home prices going up, they'd never go down. But it's also important to remember that down payment requirements are a lot higher, both at Fannie and Freddie, and the private market much higher. But you still have FHA loans available for fairly high-priced homes where you only have to put down 3.5%.
Hmm. Dina?
But even,
and where I live, you can get a $729,750 mortgage for FHA insured with a 3.5% down. That's not low and moderate income.
Interesting.
True, but even the FHA is really tightening its requirements. There was a time when FHA didn't have, you know, a minimum credit score. Now they're saying minimum credit score of 500. Now credit scores run from 300 to 850, so a minimum credit score of 500 is not much. But in addition to that, the lenders are imposing their own requirements on top of what FHA is requiring. So they're going beyond what the FHA is asking of them. And so it is getting tougher.
So bottom line here, Guy, listener out there, what can they expect when they go into the marketplace? Credit tougher but not impossible? What's the best description?
Yeah, I think as Tom indicated, you know, a lot of the tightening of underwriting needed to be made, and it's not necessarily bad. It can be a healthy thing. There's a lot of mortgage credit out there if you can qualify, and between FHA, VA, and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a lot of people can qualify. So it makes sense to shop around and look at your different options.
Tom, let me ask you about another dimension of this marketplace, which is foreclosures. As I read it, there are on track this year for 1 million foreclosures, which is 10 times the normal rate. Obviously, this is related to what we were just talking about, the history of making poor loans with flimsy requirements. How is this affecting the marketplace, this glut of foreclosures?
Well, it's affected it in a number of ways. The first thing, and this is the thing that I think in the short run people are worried about, is that if the number of foreclosed homes on the market increases substantially, then that is going to put downward pressure on home prices in those areas. And people are very worried about that. Second, you have the situation is that if you're going to have over a million people lose their home to foreclosure, those people are also going to see their credit scores eviscerated. And so that actually diminishes the potential number of new buyers going forward.
Mm-hmm. And what about the related question, Dina, of the administration had a policy in place, spending a lot of money to try to keep people in their homes, because everybody agrees foreclosure is sort of the last resort. I gather it hasn't been very successful.
Well, I think what's happened is the way you needed to get your loan modified to get a lower payment, you had to go through a trial, a trial period, and then get a permanent modification. Less than 400,000 people have gotten this permanent modification of their loans. They've gotten their interest rates lowered to as low as 2% for about 5 years. But there are another, 500,000-something people who have not qualified for the program, and they've dropped out. And so it hasn't gained that much traction.
That's Dina El-Bogadi of the Washington Post, also Guy Sakala of Inside Mortgage Finance, and Tom Lawler from Laurel Economic and Housing Consulting. I'm Steve Roberts. I'll be back with your calls and your comments about housing in just a minute. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away on vacation. And Dina, we were just discussing this question of the loan modification program and hadn't been terribly successful because a lot of people have dropped out, haven't qualified. But you say there's also a backlash against it.
Yes. There are many people out there who have been paying their mortgages on time, who feel they've done all the right things. And they get angry when they hear about other people whom they feel have not done all the right things, getting a bailout, what they see as a bailout from the government. And that's the point that any time I write about mortgages, that's what I hear. I get very angry emails, very angry calls about that.
And Guy, there's a sticking to this question of government policy. One of the reasons why we're doing this show is there have been a number of stories recently saying that there's a movement in the administration that, given the history of easy credit and this philosophy, George Bush talked about an ownership society, and there was this long-standing economic and even philosophical notion that home ownership was a great good and a great value in America. And now, given the experiences of the last few years, we're starting to hear stories about the administration turning to a new policy. What do you hear? What's in the works here?
Well, yeah, the two kind of realities that the administration has to deal with. One is the fact that there's so many foreclosures out there that it's clear that people got into homes that shouldn't have been put into homes, and so that any policy that promoted getting people into a house when they can't afford it at all costs is obviously a mistake. You know, we've also seen the fact that the government now is accounting for close to 96% of all mortgages being made. That's not a position the government wants to be in, and it has to extract itself from that. Those two forces generally are pushing them to dial back the whole idea of home ownership and to say, you know, perhaps a number of people would be better off renting.
Tom, what's your take on this situation? It seems like for the Obama administration, which is, we're talking about, for instance, right now, a fight over taxes, and we're the champion of the middle class on tax policy, that to follow a policy that would result in more limited home ownership, it's got to be a difficult shift for them.
Well, I think it is, but so far I haven't seen any evidence that they've really shifted. I mean, what they've really done is they admittedly the FHA has tightened underwriting standards, but we still have a situation that, number one, they opened up the FHA program to a much larger part of the market by raising the loan limits, and they have also provided government relief. Admittedly, the program has not been very successful in the modification program, but only to homeowners. Renters who have had trouble or have had difficulty paying their rent because of job losses and the face eviction, there's been not a dime. So I don't really see any shift in the administration's program so far against homeownership. Against investors in real estate, yes, but homeownership, I don't see it.
Dina, what's your take on this issue?
Well, the catchphrase now for the administration is definitely sustainable home ownership. They keep talking about that in every speech they give on home ownership.
And what does that mean, you think?
Somebody who can get the mortgage and keep paying the mortgage through the life of the loan. And so, but I think the delicate balancing act for them is that they want to get the housing market up on its feet and going again because it helps the economy, but they don't want to So they don't want to impede that, but at the same time, they don't want to open themselves up to all kinds of risk now that the market is basically controlled by the government. And so it's just hard for them to strike that balancing act, and that's what they're struggling with. And they're also struggling with the fact that at some point they know they need to extricate themselves from the market, but at what point and how?
And you talk about this as a delicate balancing act. This is actually a delicate balancing act the administration is facing in many economic areas.
That's right.
In terms of wanting to stimulate the economy. At the same time, there are deficit problems that are looming. We see this in the tax debate. What's your best read as to the thinking inside the administration as the direction they want to go here?
My best read on it is that they're really struggling. They just don't know. The market is clearly weak. Once you take away the incentives like the tax credit, someone described it as, you know, sort of ripping off the bandage and realizing that the wound hasn't healed yet. They are really struggling with what to do next. I mean, they keep saying they want the private sector back in. They don't want all this government support in the market, but they don't know how to get out at this point because they are so linked.
And Guy, you raised this question. The inventory that now is enormous in terms of what Fannie and Freddie have, and because of all the foreclosures. Any talk about really returning this to a free market, I mean, is way down the road, right?
Yeah, I think that's the problem. You know, we're still in the midst of a mortgage crisis, if not a housing crisis, so that it is very tough for the administration to talk about dialing back anything at this point. They're really just happy to maintain the status quo to some extent.
And Tom, we're going to get to our callers and emails in just a second, but sort of a final point here. Do you think this is a good time for people to buy? I mean, if they obviously we've been talking about needing higher credit scores and maybe a higher down payment, but in a larger sense, with so many houses on the market and prices lower, it sounds like in many ways it's a good time for people to get into this market.
Well, I mean, it obviously varies by region, but in aggregate, I think this is a very good time to explore buying a home if you can afford it, because what you see is that in many parts of the country, because of the excess inventory and the troubled properties on the market, it is now you're now in a situation that in many cases you can buy a home and end up with a mortgage payment that is below what it would cost you to rent the comparable property, and that hasn't been the case for quite a while. And so I think that if you do your research, do your market research, I think it can be an excellent time to buy.
And I also gather, Dina, that for so-called jumbo loans, these are loans, I guess, of a certain size. I don't know what the cutoff is, about
$700,000, $800,000. Yeah,
$729,000. That... now is a terrific time. That rates are really low, and that people who can qualify can actually, as Tom was saying, have very reasonable, manageable mortgage payments, even for a house maybe more expensive than they thought they could afford.
The jumbo mortgages for a long time had interest rates that were a lot higher, and those interest rates have come down a bit. So we're not at the point of the 4-point-something% interest rates on these jumbo loans at all. But yes, I mean, if people are in the market, those rates have come down from where they used to be.
Let me read some emails. We've got a number of folks who want to join this conversation. This is Russ from Richmond, New Hampshire. On many days, I take long bicycle rides through southern New Hampshire and Massachusetts. While pedaling slowly, I'm amazed to see how many abandoned houses there are out there. It seems like an epidemic. There are never for sale signs. I assume the banks own them. Does anyone have any idea how many pieces of abandoned property the banks own? Why don't they sell these to people who need them? Guy?
Well, there is a lot of abandoned property, and it's not, and a lot of it is bank owned too. You know, he identified it correctly. The problem banks have is that it's a very complicated transaction when they foreclose. A lot of times the banks don't actually own the loan. They're servicing it for somebody else. So there's not a lot of incentive to deal with it. Also, if there's a big loss up front, it may make sense to get it over with, but lenders and servicers tend to take their time on doing that. And we've got a huge amount of property that really hasn't even been put for sale in the market because the servicing or the mortgage industry doesn't have confidence it can sell it very quickly.
Or for a price that would begin to make back what they have invested in it.
Right, which they may never, ever get. You know, I think that's the point. A lot of people would say, let's get it over with, take your lumps and take a low price, but get it down.
Dina?
There was also a while when the lenders were waiting for a signal from the administration as to what the administration's policy would be in terms of modifying loans. And so they held on to these properties mm-hmm. as all of that as they were trying to work through all of that. Now they have a better sense of which loans they're going to be able to modify, which loans they can't. And so the thinking is that a lot of these homes that they held on to are going to start going up for sale now. And indeed, over the past 2 months, a lot more have been coming onto the market for sale.
One of the points you made earlier that I would gather a lot of listeners would be confused at, why has the program to keep more people in their homes not been more successful? You pointed out that a lot of people have dropped out of the program. Is it just that it's too complicated or that in the end they simply don't have the income, particularly given the job crisis, to even with reduced payments to keep in their homes? What's the best analysis of why this hasn't worked better?
It's all of these things combined. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically at the beginning, the administration just wanted to get people into the program, and the lenders were doing that, but they hadn't checked out the paperwork yet. So there are all sorts. The reasons that the administration cites is A, missing paperwork, or they didn't have time to verify the income for these people. When they did verify the income, it wasn't what those people said it was. And also just, you know, people not paying their mortgages while they were in that trial basis, you know, missing a payment or two and getting kicked out for that reason.
So in some ways, there's a double whammy here. There are people who got into these homes, and now with you add the job crisis, that is a second problem on top of the first, really.
Yeah, and the loss of employment is really not a problem that the loan modification problem addresses. You know, the administration's identified something like 3.5 million borrowers who are facing foreclosure. As Dina pointed out, you know, less than 500,000 have gotten any sort of loan modification. The basic problem is a lot of people just don't qualify for it for one reason or another. And I think we're getting to the point where we're going to say we can't modify a lot of these loans. Foreclosure is going to be a viable option, and we're just going to have to see more of it.
Here's another email, Tom, I'd like you to respond to. This is Mike Fleming writes to us, I feel stuck where I am. Relocation isn't an option. I would love to be closer to my job at 60 miles away. And this is another issue that Dina was bringing up as well, right, that a lot of folks who might normally be in the market can't unload their old home, so they're not potential buyers.
That's right. And these are called, you know, underwater borrowers. They owe more on their mortgage than their property is worth, and so they can't sell and they can't refinance. And these underwater borrowers, I mean, they're very vulnerable to foreclosure because if should anything happen to them, any kind of financial setback like job loss, medical problems, et cetera, they won't be able to sell their house and refinance their way out of trouble.
Tom, what's your take on this problem?
Well, it's exactly right, and this is one of the issues and one of the reasons that home sales remain depressed, because in many cases there tends to be a food chain. You know, a lot of people, they own a home and they've been in a while, and then they look to trade up, and then a first-time buyer looks to buy their home. But if you're underwater, you can't move, and it actually highlights one of the, you know, everyone has often talked about the benefits of home ownership, but people are now talking about sustainable home ownership. And it's not just can you afford the mortgage. It is do you have equity in the home?
Mm-hmm.
And what people have found is when lots of people end up with negative equity or they owe more than their home, it has huge negative economic impacts. Job mobility is reduced, as this person is talking about. They want to go somewhere else, but they can't. You end up with more foreclosures, and that depresses values in the area. So when we talk about sustainable home ownership, it is not simply a matter of can you afford the mortgage. Do you have equity in the home? That's critical in defining sustainable home ownership.
Good point. Thank you. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Here's another email that I'd like you folks to respond to. Tico Nico writes to us, helped a friend pick out and buy a short sale house. She was able to pay cash for it, but chose to get an $80,000 mortgage. It took CAPS 4 months to close. It seems to me that we're going to have a long future with a housing market dominated by distressed properties if the banks and the real estate companies aren't motivated to sell them in a reasonable amount of closing time. Guy?
Short sales have been notorious for delays and problems. Actually, 4 months is pretty good for a short sale. It's sort
really
of sad
good.
To say. But typically, I think a short sale has been 8 months to a year in the past. And there is a host of problems, from second lien holders to investors to the banks themselves just not approving these things. It's a very difficult transaction, and it's very frustrating for people actually buying them. So,
but you say they're actually on the better side of this deal than they did
right.
in 3 or 4 months.
It's improved
significantly. Oh, absolutely.
It's still pathetic, though.
Let's bring in Suzanne in Arlington, Virginia. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show, Suzanne.
Good morning. I am thrilled to be able to tell my story. You all are telling us that it's harder to get a mortgage. Let me tell you the personal experience that my husband and I had last summer when we sold our home in Arlington. Now sit down and hang on to your hearts, because you're going to have a heart attack when I tell you these numbers. The house sold for $760,000. My husband gave the purchasers $10,000 cash back. So they were looking for a mortgage of $750,000. The first lender they went to appraised the house at $725,000. The real estate agents had cardiac arrest and realized that the deal was going to fall through, so they shopped around and found another lender who didn't even bother to come by our home to make a visual approval. The young couple who bought our home were 28 years old. The wife never intends to work another minute in her life. They, at that point, had a four-month-old baby. They were able to get a mortgage commitment for $742,750. They put down $7,250 on a $760,000 purchase. They got the tax credit of $8,000. They put down less than 1%, and they got an FHA mortgage. How do I know this? I went to the closing. I asked them what kind of mortgage they have. And I have a copy of their closing documents.
And yet, I
know I have read that FHA will only insure up to $729,750. We all took basic math, and we know $742,750 is $13,000 above that. This young man is making in excess of $180,000. He's a 28-year-old lawyer who's been in practice for 3 years. Do we want FHA insuring people like that? I've got a brother who makes $50,000
Suzanne,
in Connecticut and never bought a house because he couldn't afford it.
Okay, Suzanne, I want to give Guy a chance to respond to you. Thanks.
Yes, you know, this is one of the big public policy issues. Should FHA be insuring mortgages up to 729, 750? And I think a lot of people think the answer is no. That's one issue that the Obama administration is going to have to wrestle with. That loan limit expires at the end of this year. The Congress is actually going to have to step forward and say, we want to continue it for another year at 729, 750, or we want to start letting it slide back to 650 or some other level. In terms of your question about the 742, I don't know how that's possible because you're correct. The FHA loan limit in high-cost areas like Arlington is 729, 750, and theoretically you can't go much above that. You can roll in some closing costs and other things.
That's Guy Sokolic from Inside Mortgage Finance, and Dina Al-Baghdadi from The Washington Post with me, and Tom Lawler as well. I'm Steve Roberts sitting in for Diane today. We're going to come back with all your calls and your comments about the housing crisis in just a minute, so you stay right where you are.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
What's next for cell and smartphones? Once they were simply for making and receiving calls, today they can be used to text, browse, shop, take photos, play videos. The future of mobile communications. The Diane Rehm Show next hour. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane while she's away on vacation. Our subject this hour is the housing market, and I've got three experts with me to talk about it. Guy Sokolic of Inside Mortgage Finance Publications, Dina Al-Baghdadi of The Washington Post, who writes on this subject, and Tom Lawler of Lawler Economic and Housing Consulting. And we have a number of emails here from Facebook listeners who are joining the conversation. Let me try to get through a number of these. Valerie writes to us, please speak to those who have lost homes but still have an income or who have lost one income. If a home is foreclosed on, then you have lousy credit. If you have lousy credit, it's hard to rent. It seems to me that getting folks who have been foreclosed on into a new place is important, but it is never discussed. Tom?
Well, I think that's a very, very valid point. There's two issues. One is if you have lost your home to foreclosure, how difficult is it to get a mortgage if you want to buy again? The answer is very difficult. But an awful lot of folks who rent homes also do the same sort of credit check or the like, and that is an issue. Now, it is absolutely true, though, that because in many parts of the country, apartment vacancy rates are incredibly high historically, that many apartment renters or folks renting a home are a lot more willing to rent to folks who have lost a home to foreclosure if other parts of their credit report are okay. And so I think it's very important, if you run into that issue, to sit down and talk with folks, because there are a lot of rental folks who are willing to look past foreclosure.
Okay, and Diane writes to us, I track the value of my house, and I've had to steadily decrease my price over the year. Starting at $234, now down to $164, that officially puts me upside down. So I've taken myself off the market until I can at least pay for the cost of the sale. Dina?
That's about the only thing you can really do in that situation.
Guy?
There was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend that pointed out that there were a number of people who were underwater on their mortgage who were actually liquefying other assets like investment accounts and everything just so they could sell their home and buy a new home in the current market. These were obviously well-heeled borrowers. But the idea was just because you're underwater on a mortgage doesn't mean you're trapped in it. A lot of them had some other assets they could liquefy and put it down on a home and trade up.
And take advantage of the low prices on a more expensive
home. So it's not like everybody who's underwater is handcuffed and can't move. You can,
but,
possibly.
But you need these other assets. And if, as one of our callers, if you lose a job, if you're, you know, these are the people who are really stuck.
Right. Yeah. You'd have to come. If you're not going to wait it out, the only other if you don't want to wait it out, the only other option is to come with money to the closing table if you're fortunate enough to have it.
Dorothy writes to us from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Please discuss whether 15 or 30-year mortgages are passé. If jobs are no longer secure, meaning people have to look for new jobs every several years, don't we need a new concept in home loans? Could there be a leasing-type arrangement like for cars, which returns something to the lessee when the lease term ends? Which sounds a little like renting. Guy, what's your reaction?
Yeah, you know, we've always had 30-year fixed-rate mortgages out there, and the average term of a mortgage has actually been closer to 7 years, sometimes as short as 5 years due to refinancing or people moving. So it's never really been that long term. The idea of leasing, I guess the idea is if you can pay less to live in a home for a shorter period of time. And we tried a bunch of different options 5 or 6 years ago, and those kind of got us in trouble because we went with interest-only loans and some other things. Perhaps if you had enough equity to begin with, that may make sense, but I'm assuming this writer is not looking to put a lot of money down either.
Let's turn to some of our callers who want to join us here. And Becky in Dallas, Texas, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show, Becky.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk to you about how mortgage rates, actually accessibility mortgage, has been affected for small business owners or self-employed people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you an example of something that happened with my husband and I. We were not upside down in our home here in Dallas, fortunately. We bought our home in 2006 at the height of the bubble. My husband is in the construction trades business, and he was making a lot of money. Our economy crashed like everybody else's, so we saw that we were not going to be able to afford to stay in this home, so we put it up for sale. We did get a buyer. We were not, again, underwater, and yet we could not get a mortgage simply because my husband's business income had been in decline. We both have 800 credit scores, and I'm like,
Becky, just Becky, I want to clarify. You couldn't get a mortgage to buy a new home.
A lower cost home. We were moving down.
Okay, right.
And we wanted to get a mortgage and a 15-year note. We've owned property since we were 19. We're both approaching 50. Both have 800 credit scores. We're not putting little down. We had a lot to put down. But we kept running into this from several lenders about, well, why is your business in decline? Why is your income in decline? Mm-hmm. So much so that we even had to write a letter. I'm like, if we have to write a letter about why our business is in decline, I don't know if I want to get money from a company that doesn't understand why the industry is in decline. So what we did was we liquidated whatever other assets we had, and we bought our home and paid cash. And I will tell you, I don't care if I ever have to go through getting a mortgage loan again. And I am really upset with the attitudes of lenders right now. They blame the Obama administration over and over again. Oh, it's because of this. It's because of that. And it seems like it's just a fight between – it's a political fight almost when you go in to try to get a mortgage loan. And I'll take my comments off the air and see if anybody has any insight into how that's affecting self-employed people.
Well, that was a very interesting account. We really appreciate your calling. Guy, what's your reaction?
It is a huge problem now. We've gone back to much tougher underwriting where a small business owner is considered self-employed. And so not only do they look at the borrowers' credit and tax returns. They want to look at the businesses' tax returns, credit, and basically potential going forward. And that's tough in this kind of environment. And that's hurting a lot of small business owners when it comes to getting a mortgage. If they're on the edge in terms of qualifying, they're not going to qualify.
And Becky was an example of the phenomenon you had just mentioned, which is at least people with other assets who are finding it difficult to get a mortgage, they were lucky enough to have other assets that they could liquidate in order to be able to buy the home for cash. But that's an option for some people, but not a lot of people.
No, exactly. And that, you know, right now, if you can do the dance in terms of getting a mortgage and qualify, it makes sense. If you can't, if you've got any other option, it makes sense to utilize it.
Dina, quick. Yeah.
I think also what she's seeing is that lenders are just scared to death. I mean, they have to sell their loans to Fannie, to Freddie. And so in order to do that, they have to meet Fannie and Freddie qualifications. And if they don't, and if for some reason later on down the line, 2 or 3 years after lenders made the loan, Fannie or Freddie deemed that they didn't underwrite it properly, they didn't look into something well enough, that lender has to repurchase the loan. And the lenders are just not in a position to be repurchasing a whole lot of these loans, and so they're just terrified.
Now, is that an example of overcorrection? Is that part of what we're seeing, that from a period of obviously of negligence and far laxer standards than proved to be intelligent or rational, that are people overcorrecting for someone like our last caller? Is that
a lot of people think so? Yeah, that the pendulum's just swung too far in the other direction at this point.
Okay, let's
I mean, I think it absolutely is an example of overcorrection, but it's partly because there are so few lenders or banks who are actually making mortgages that hold.
Okay, good. Rachel, you there? Rachel?
Hello?
Yes, Rachel, yes. You're on the line, but turn off your radio, please. Okay.
Thank you so much. I'll turn that off. I'm calling for dual reasons. The lady's story that she just told, we have experienced that same issue in that we wanted to take a 25-year note and pay it off in 15 years. We wanted to pay it, increase our payments, and pay it back faster. Our income at this point is limited because we have developing income that comes in, but our worth is good. Our annual income is more than enough to sustain how we live and to have picked up this measly $300 a month extra payment that it would have cost to have brought our home mortgage down to a 15-year mortgage. So we were denied. We were absolutely denied a new loan because our monthly income was not high enough to the ratio. The ratio was out of balance, and so therefore we could not reduce our note. My son, his home will soon be in foreclosure. He has six. There's six in his family. Two of them are in college. He is a developer, a very successful developer. His house will go into foreclosure. He has educated himself during the past years in advanced SIP wall developing, in sales. He goes to on the weekends when there are home shows where you show your products. He works on the weekends with them to try to get contracts, to try to increase, and he pulls in a little bit of work, but his monthly income is not there. His wife has gone to work. He has two children in college. Three of his children have gone to work. His house is getting ready to go into foreclosure. And y'all use words like viable option. You use words like, well, isn't that, it's pitiful. You know, you seem not to really be really, really in touch with what a how catastrophic this is, and how can this home process improve as long as the enormous number of businesses that are involved in development and involved in construction, and they cannot do that as long as these cheap houses are on the market and people are buying these cheap houses and they are not building and they can't get loans to build, and that enormous industry is absolutely put to bed. I do not know how we anticipate overcoming it, and I would like to hear your thoughts on the impact that these unemployed construction people is having.
We will try to get some reactions for you, and we very much appreciate your call. Thank you, Rachel. A lot of passion in this woman, and a sense of great frustration of people who have played by the rules and made their own way and are now getting caught in this crunch, Dina.
That's right. I mean, the new home sales in particular, the newly built homes, they're really plummeting. And one of the biggest problems is that they face really stiff competition from the previously built homes, particularly the foreclosure. So even though these new homes are a very small segment of the sales activity, they are perhaps the most important segment because they contribute a lot to job growth because of the construction jobs and all the related jobs. So that is one of the big problems that's out there.
And so if you are, as this caller's son is, if you're in this business, it's not just that your business falls off, but then your ability to buy a home as a homeowner, if you're a carpet salesman who you supply appliances or all of the other industries that are related to new home construction guy, there's a ripple effect there, right?
Yeah, basically being hit by everything that's mm-hmm. going wrong. You know, the market with a lot of foreclosures out there and people penalizing you by saying we want much tougher underwriting. On the other side, making it harder for people to buy homes, too. Unfortunately, I think the only way is to wait for this to be cleaned up. You're not going to see any liberalizing or loosening of underwriting and accommodating more of these borrowers until the problem loans start going away.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Tom, what would you say to a woman like Becky who just called, obviously deeply upset on behalf of both herself and her son, a sense of frustration, a sense of unfairness in this situation? Is there any answer for someone like that?
Well, there's a couple. First off, I'm very disturbed that if she wanted to get a new mortgage to pay down her mortgage more quickly, they would focus just on a particular ratio mm-hmm. because that is going to be a loan that is going to be a better credit because the principal's paid down faster. The second one, though, is a tougher one because we are in a situation where we still have an incredibly elevated by historical standard number of vacant homes on the market. In other words, there is still an excess supply of housing. And in a world where there is such a large number of vacant homes for sale and concern about new homes coming on the market because of foreclosures, it's unclear whether you would want to have any policies that would stimulate new construction when there's already too many homes for sale.
Right.
So it is very frustrating for people in the industry. I know people in the industry. I know people personally who are having a difficult time. But to have a situation where we start to build more homes before we take up the existing supply seems pretty crazy.
We have time for maybe one more caller. And Donna in Indianapolis, you've been waiting the longest. Thanks for your patience. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and greetings to you and all of your guests. Since I've been listening to the other comments, kind of what I wanted to talk about is different, but what initiated my desire to call is that I heard one of your guests say that FHA didn't have a credit score. Well, a credit score is a fairly new phenomenon. It's something that I guess was invented by a credit union in order to make more money for this magic number that people strive to have. But when I was younger, I started working at FHA, which was truly then just FHA, a Federal Housing Administration. And they actually had people, mortgage credit examiners, that looked at people's sustainability of income, whether or not they had sustainable employment, sufficient income. There were percentages that they used to tell whether or not you could afford all of your debts, including a home. And they even reviewed those insured mortgages once they came to closing. But what has happened now is that they've allowed the foxes into the hen house, so to say, and people talk about government, but government is the people. People elect a Congress, and Congress produces legislation, and that's what FHA used in order to insure properties. But more and more, mortgage companies took over the lending. I don't even think FHA insures loans. It's hard for me to believe. I don't even think they review loans.
Okay, Donna,
so why they're insuring them, I have no idea, but that's just something I wanted to say.
I appreciate very much your saying it, and we've got a couple of seconds for a reply, Guy.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, FHA used to have a traditional underwriting program where they looked at the borrower and looked at a bunch of characteristics. Meanwhile, the overall mortgage market migrated towards credit scores and became very dependent on that. The administration has reluctantly gone to embracing credit scores more than they have in the past. And you're right, lenders arbitrarily with FHA impose like a 620 credit score, even though they're not required to, just because that's what they know.
That's going to have to be the last word. That's Guy Sakala. He works for Inside Mortgage Finance Publications. Dina Elbogadotti of the Washington Post, who covers real estate. Joining us by phone from Leesburg, Thomas Lawler of Lawler Economic and Housing Consulting. Thank you all for being with us. Most interesting conversation. And I thank so many of your listeners for joining this conversation and sharing your personal stories with us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and thanks so much for spending an hour with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Aaron Stamper. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.